Hey friends, Devin again for the Bardic Babble podcast, the show where we interview creators about the things that they create. On today's episode, we are diving into the Kids on Bikes RPG with creators Jonathan Gilmore and Doug Lewandowski. It was a great conversation. We really just kind of peeled back the layers of independent game design, these guys' origin stories, and a little bit about the product series, what's to come, and what the future holds for it. But before we get into it today, I just wanted to see if you have the opportunity today to go to your preferred podcatcher and leave the show a rating and review. It helps us to be seen by more folks and just really spreads the show around as best as possible. That's the power of the listener. If you get the opportunity, head on over, drop a rating, drop a review. And without further ado, let's dive into it with John and Doug. On today's episode of Bardic Babble, I have John Gilmore, and I'm going to butcher your last name. I'm sorry, Doug. Is it Lewandowski?
That's it.
Did it. The creators of Kids on Brooms, Kids on Bikes, Kids in Space. So can you guys just go ahead and just give an elevator pitch of yourselves, the products you've worked on?
Sure. Doug Lewandowski. I am a freelance game designer out of New Jersey. I have worked on, like you said, Kids on Bikes, Teens in Space, Kids on Brooms, and a couple other things. One that I think we're going to start talking about very soon, but until then, those are the major published ones for right now.
All right. And John?
So I'm Jonathan Gilmore. I'm a freelance game designer out of Northwest Ohio. I've worked on probably about 25 games that have hit the market between RPGs and board games. Some of the bigger ones have been Dead of Winter, Dinosaur Island, Kids on Bikes. I've got a few upcoming things, but nothing. Apollo just came out, but I think we'll do plugs later.
Nice. So how did the two of you meet?
Probably Metatopia.
I think Metatopia.
Yeah. So there's a local convention focused on playtesting, and we met there, hit it off, chatted online a bit, and playtested each other's stuff, liked it, and eventually decided to work together on some stuff.
Yeah, I think it was probably a late night Metatopia hangout. That's where we meet a lot of different people, as at the late night at conventions. But
LobbyCon.
Yeah, and I think we just hit it off and started talking.
Nice. So just in a little bit of brevity, how did you guys wind up at Kids on Bikes?
So that was because Doug and I had both just watched separately season one of Stranger Things. And I was already talking to another designer about doing a board game. And Doug posted, hey, does anybody want to work on a Stranger Things board game? And I was like, hey, I'm already working on a board game, but what if we did an RPG? And he was like, oh, I've never done one of those. That sounds awesome.
Nice. So for those who haven't played Kids on Bikes, what sets it aside from other RPGs?
We worked really hard to make sure that the narrative was the focus rather than, a bunch of confusing tables and all that sort of stuff. And we really wanted it to capture that feeling of those pieces of media that we really loved, you know, where the younger characters telling the story together. And it's about all of them, how they grow as a group, how they change as a group, how they fall apart and come back together, all that sort of stuff, rather than, you know, an 18-round combat that takes 2 hours. We wanted it to be fast, light. And one of our design philosophies that we share, I think one of the reasons we work so well together, is we're both of the attitude that the rules in your game should get the hell out of the way and let the game play, whether it's a board game or an RPG. So we always want to keep things as rules-light as possible, while still providing the constraints that are so much fun. And that's what we love about games, right? Those voluntary constraints.
I'm actually pretty new to Kids on Bikes, just picked up Kids on Brooms. You guys have an entire, right in the, you know, the start of the book, a entire chapter of, you know, inclusivity and, you know, making sure everybody feels welcome at the table. Recently in, you know, the Twitter sphere, there's been a lot of moving towards that. A lot of designers and systems that haven't necessarily focused on that are now moving to that. What was your guys' foresight into that? Was it just personal philosophy, or did you see the industry eventually moving that way?
Yeah, a lot of that comes from our personal philosophy and the games we were playing. We both realized early on that, you know, safety tools are super important and end up making for a better role-playing experience. Obviously, if you're playing with people that you trust you might need them a little bit less. But even then, just having some guidelines and tools to, you know, help set boundaries and, you know where the story is going to go and where you don't want it to go is important. Because even with your friends, sometimes it's hard to talk about that. And we're looking at ways to, like, even drive that further in the game and try to make things a little bit more baked in.
Okay, that's neat.
Yeah, and while we were working on it, after we had sent it out to playtesters, we got an email from somebody who we'd only interacted really briefly with online. And he said, and I got his permission to share the story. I've shared it on Facebook. So just because I think what he says, it's important for people to know that sharing his story with his permission. He sent both of us an email that said, "Hey, I really dig the game. I love playing in it. Role-playing games have always been this great escape for me because I've been physically disabled since birth. And I was just wondering, since this is such a realistic setting, would it be possible to play as someone with a pretty profound physical disability? What would that count as? Would that count as a flaw?" And that just, like, gutted me, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that somebody felt like to play our game the way they are, that our system might suggest that who they are is flawed in some way. And that just really reinforced that we need to do the best job we possibly can to make sure that everybody knows that who you are in the game is wonderful and awesome and be you. So,
yeah, I mean, that really put a hard stop on the development. I think that day we had a phone call.
Yeah.
And really reevaluated a lot of things and decided to, you know, really make that an important part of it.
Yeah. But if you want to know what it takes to make me cry in a hotel room in Chicago, that's what. Yeah.
Well, and it's nice getting that kind of feedback, especially in development, so that you can make those nice pivots at that time, mm-hmm. instead of having to, like Wizards of the Coast is right now, having to make hard pivots and, you know, reassess language and products that are 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also sure that, 20 years from now, hopefully people are still looking at Kids on Bikes, but, I think 20 years from now, people will look back on the games that are coming out in 2020 and say, wow, they're doing these really cool things. And I see how that's a step forward. But wow, look at this problematic thing. And look at that problematic thing, which is great. Right. As people get more comfortable saying, these are boundaries for me, this is something that's bothering me, games are just going to get, like John said, better and better at ratcheting up what's fun for people and making it fun for everybody at the table. I know in the last 10 years, I've gone so far from, oh, it's just a game, lighten up, this is all funny, have a sense of humor, to like actually understanding that things that don't cause, this is going to sound like a totally ridiculous revelation, but like things that don't cause me harm may cause harm to other people, right? Mm-hmm. Which, like, actually putting into words sounds so unbelievably narcissistic to like have that only occur to me in the past 10 years. But I think so much of the discussion around games is moving towards that in such a wonderful direction that I think it's going to continue. And I like honestly look forward to the day when we're, making a list of like, okay, when we do the next edition, we've got to make sure that we get this, this, and this, rock solid. Even now we've had some conversations about like, if we do another edition, what are we going to be focusing on, right? What are we going to be changing to make it more collaborative, more inclusive, better?
Can you share any of those with us?
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay. So one of the things that came up recently in conversation with a friend of ours was the notion of violence. And so one of the things that when John and I were working on Kids on Bikes, one of the things we said was, we don't want this to be a game where violence is the solution, right? Sure, there are going to be times when somebody throws a punch. Sure, there are going to be times when somebody gets tackled. But we don't want it to be that like murder hobo philosophy of, okay, well, we solve our problems by punching it or shooting it or cutting it, because that doesn't make for interesting stories or as interesting stories most of the time. And so we baked in to the game that combat is always unbelievably dangerous, right? That the way that roles go could result in a character being killed. And that's always been a bit of a surprise to players. But we had a really long and really great conversation with a friend of ours who said, why not, you do such a great job of setting some of these boundaries, why not also use some of that boundary work mid-game to set boundaries for the violence, right? Like if my character, the example that we kept going back to was like, you know, your character steals my character's Game Boy. I'm not going to try to kill you for that. I don't want to like roll a 20, get a lucky break, and then roll another like 16, have you roll a 4 and be like, yeah, you punch him in the heart and he's dead, right? Like we want to set the boundaries for here's what I am risking and here's what I am trying to do to the other person. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, I'm going after John's character that way, he says, I'm comfortable with that, but I'm not comfortable with that. I want to put the line here. And then we go into it, right? And then we're more collaboratively telling the story instead of whoever rolls higher tells the story. So that's one thing that's been on our mind lately.
Yeah.
And that's, I really liked in Kids and Brooms, you guys have the, you know, especially when two casters go at each other, the repercussions of becoming an NPC, losing the character. That was really cool. And as I was explaining that to my play group, we tried it out on Sunday and they were like, wait, you get our character? Like, and we're very rooted in Pathfinder and D&D, so you know the go straight to the heart kind of a mentality is it's there, and mm-hmm. we've really been liking Kids on Bikes and now Kids on Brooms to kind of break away from that and tell the story together instead of, you know, me just marching down the street with a flag.
Right. Yeah.
Now, do you guys get outreach from other developers and game designers as to how to incorporate these philosophies and language into their games?
That's a good question. I don't think we've gotten, I mean, we've always reached out to other people from the start, because we're very much about, you know, working with people who are super knowledgeable about these kind of things. But we haven't really had much outreach to us about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people in the industry who we've learned so much from that, like, they're the ones who would be better able to answer other people's questions than us. We'd be happy to, but it's like, you know, we're like the fifth graders helping their, you know, if somebody asks like their however old kid sibling with their homework rather than like going to talk to the teacher, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when people reach out to us about any of that stuff, like I know for me, I'm like, oh, well, you should really talk to like Kate Bullock and, you know, pay her to do this because she's a better asset than I could be. Like,
yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah, or Mendez, who did the safety work for Kids on Brooms, also great. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, you guys are through Hunters Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Did you guys reach out to them, or was it, you know, they found you guys and...
Kind of. It was a little bit of happenstance. It was Gen Con, and I was rushing to a meeting, and I ran into Ivan, who I had interacted with a bunch online, and like we talked all the time, but we'd never met in person. And I saw him like standing around talking to somebody, and I stopped real quick, even though I was running a little bit late. And I was like, "Hey, yeah, I just wanted to stop and introduce myself." And he's like, "Oh, what are you working on?" And you know, I kind of showed him a couple projects, and I was like, "Oh, well, I've got this RPG because Doug and I were just trying to kickstart it at the time. Mm-hmm. Even though we don't really want to self-publish, we're like, this is going to get." You know, we'll print a couple hundred copies and be done with it. And I ran into Ivan and showed him the cover, and he immediately was like, oh, don't show this to anybody else. I want to talk to you about it. And we kind of just went from there.
Yeah.
And I think we just had him call like the next week, and he was like, yeah, we want to do this. So mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Who does the artwork for the books?
Heather Vaughn. She's a Philly-based artist, well, illustrator, and yeah, she was suggested to us. I think two of our friends, when we were looking for an artist, both suggested her. Mm-hmm. And we looked through her portfolio online and said, like, oh, man, this is like really cool. And we thought it was going to go in a very different direction based on what we saw there. Sort of gave her the loose prompt of like, we want a kid, but a couple kids on a bicycle. One of them like kind of, I don't know, like looking surprised or startled at something. She just ran with it, right? Like the over the shoulder, like... It was, I mean, we saw it and we were like, oh my God, yes. And so, yeah, we've worked with her on every project we possibly can, basically.
I love her art.
She does
great. Yeah, that cover was the first piece we had spec'd out, right? Like that was the test piece.
Mm-hmm. That was the first one. Yep.
I don't think you've seen it, Dud, but I just finally got to hang up. I've got poster size prints of a few of my covers. So we just got there.
Nice.
The Kids on Bike one right in front of my desk.
Oh, so nice. Yeah, I'm really excited for the posters off of the Renegade Puzzle.
Yes.
Kickstarter. So that's definitely going up probably there.
Nice. And then that's the other arm of it is, you know, is Renegade. How's it been working with them?
Oh, it's been fantastic. I mean, they have such a huge reach at hobby and, you know, retail that, you know, they can just take and their marketing is so good. They can just take the project and, you know, elevate it and really get it to reach people like the huge banners at Gen Con. And I mean, that's not something a small, you know, Hunters is growing fast, but I mean, they've got so much reach that it's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like just such wonderful people to work with. And like for both companies, the design, at least as far as I can tell, is like forefront for them, right? You know, there's the marketability aspect as well, but there hasn't been any argument about like, well, sure, this will make it a better game, but here's why from a marketing reason, or here's why from a, you know, you want to add 20 pages to this book, cut it out. That's going to cut our costs by this much and we'll still be able to charge the same. There's been none of that, right? So like it's been phenomenal. Yeah, just phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's always been really important, like, you know, even just discussing like what we want to handle and what we want to hand off and, you know, where we want to keep control with like the art and stuff. Like they've let us really keep artistic control because we did all the art direction for the original books and we kept doing that for everything because that vision's important to us. And a lot of companies would, you know, try to step in, but they've been awesome about letting us do our thing. And even like what we do next, we want to do Teens in Space, and they kind of pushed us to, they suggested Kids on Brooms as the follow-up product, but we're like, oh, we really want to do space. And they let us, which was great.
Nice. So you guys mentioned you were originally looking at kickstarting, maybe pushing a couple hundred books. Did you ever foresee the future in which there were giant banners at Gen Con and coming on podcasts and talking about the products?
No, it's been insane.
Yeah.
Way more than I ever expected.
Yeah. I guess it was 2 summers ago. I was at, my wife and I were taking like a little like mini vacation. And as part of our drive to it, she scheduled us to drive through this small town with like a little game store that's supposed to be one of the best on the East Coast. So we go and we're looking around and I'm looking at a game and she starts laughing. And I'm like, yeah, it's funny that I'm checking out games, right? She's like, look up. I look up and there's a, you know, yay big, you know, about the size of like my torso hanging poster of Kids on Bikes. She said, just stand there, takes a picture. And I'm like, oh God, this is so weird and embarrassing. And like, I start laughing and then everybody in the store is looking at us and like, yeah, it was really awkward, but also wonderful. Right. But no, like never expected anything like this.
Yeah. And like now it's going even further. It's getting translated into different languages and
yeah.
You know, we're just seeing so much growth with it. It's great.
It's awesome. Do you guys have plans to continue building in the Kids on, Teens on?
We do.
Nice. Are you doing like supplemental products or just continuing to do different themes like space, like brooms?
Yeah, so we have a couple supplemental products that we can talk about. And then the other stuff is the secret stuff for now. But we did the Strange Adventures Volume 1 and Volume 2 for Kids on Bikes, which have additional adventure prompts, right? Pre-built towns to kind of, for GMs who want a little bit more to sink their teeth into at the start. We're doing a Space Adventures Volume 1 with 2 4-part adventures written by folks we've worked with in the past. Kristen and Tim Devine from Dice Up Games, who did some work for Strange Adventures 2 and did some work for Teens in Space. They're putting together an adventure that's more sandboxy. And then Cleo Yunsu Davis, who also did work for SA2 and also did work for Teens in Space. They're also creating a 4-part adventure that's a little bit more linear. And so that supplement will have both of those things for people to latch on to. Yeah, that's been really cool to work on.
Are you guys looking at doing, I don't know, theme diced cards, bestiaries, anything of that nature? Or
yeah, I mean, we have the dice. Those came out, I think, with the original release, right?
Yep.
And then we have a deck of cards for the powered character in Kids on Bikes. So the GM doesn't have to write stuff on note cards and hand it out. They have a pre-generated deck. And as far as that goes, that's everything we can talk about now.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
But we are very happy with how the dice and the cards went. So, shrug.
Sure. You do independent. That's how we started the conversation. You're independent game designers. Has the success of the kids series helped you stay on that track? Were you ever looking at joining, a large studio or production house or anything like that?
So my aspect's probably a little bit different than Dud's, because I've been, releasing stuff for a while and had a lot of different options. I mean, there's been some talk. I was with, Pandasaurus Games for a while doing their head of development and stuff. But I don't know if the right offer came around, and as long as it wasn't, creatively restrictive, definitely.
And for me, I've been doing this as a hobby, and I plan to keep doing this as a hobby. It's nice that it's now a hobby that pays for itself. When I was starting to get into it, that was like, because I think it's good to go into stuff with a goal. Like, my wife and I had a conversation about what the goal is. I said, well, the goal is not for me to quit my job. The goal is for hopefully this hobby to pay for itself. And here we are. So that's been awesome. I'm a teacher. I love teaching, and I want to keep teaching. If this allowed me to teach a couple fewer classes so I could give more time and energy both to the classes I have and to some of the game design stuff, that'd be great. But yeah, I'm not interested in doing this full time or anything like that.
Do you find that any of your students play the games?
That's been happening a little bit more, and that's really awkward. can we buy one of your games? You could. Will you sign it for us? We're approaching a line there. Well, do you have copies? You could sell it to us, and that's past the line, right? but yeah, I haven't. The thing that I'm looking forward to is when one of my students says, I played your game and I have questions. Why did you do this? Why didn't you do this? That's the part I'm really looking forward to. So hopefully soon on that.
So then outside of your partnership, you both, you work on your own individual projects. Do you guys want to take a couple minutes and talk about those?
Sure. Cool. John, do you have anything you're able to talk about yet?
Yeah. So I mentioned Apollo, which just came out at Tardia. I designed that with Sarah Addison, who's a local designer. That's based on the Apollo missions to the moon, and it's a cooperative board game. I'm working on a couple different RPG projects, but not anything that I can announce yet. And I think that's it for board games that are coming out right now that I can talk.
Yeah, I am working on, I just had a game come out, a card game called Aunt Agatha's Attic, which is a real-time negotiation set collection game. That came out with Chronicle Books in May, I think. I'm also working on a game that currently is called Home, but we're probably going to change it, with Cleo, who I mentioned before. It's a role-playing game about surviving the night in a haunted house.
Oh, that's fun. With Agatha's, you mentioned Chronicles set collecting. What can you expound on that a little bit?
Oh, sure. So the publishing company is Chronicle Books. And so the way the game works is you are feuding cousins who have gotten a bunch of stuff from your aunt's attic. And as you're getting ready to leave with your pile of stuff, she says, look, I'm tired of you squabbling. You have to learn to get along. And so you're trading in real time with the other players to try to collect these sets of these items that you want. And each time you make a trade, you're able to draw another card. So you're increasing your hand size as you swap cards with other players.
Gotcha.
And all that takes place over three rounds. And I think each round is 2 minutes. So there's a lot of fast, frantic shouting over each other. It's been a lot of fun to work on. And I'm looking forward to being able to get a group of people together to play the final product.
That sounds fun. Outside of paper products, is there any plans for the kids series? I know, a lot of products are getting picked up for, video games, for TV shows. You can just give me a two blinks as a yes going towards additional media. Has there been talks about any of that yet?
I mean, we have a really good relationship with Renegade, which does a lot of, board games and non-RPG stuff. So, there's definitely talks about other products in this.
Okay. Now, just kind of to just round us out, what is your personal favorite element, feature, concept, philosophy about game design?
Oh, that's a really good and big question. I mean, my kind of personal one is that I always, like, if I don't know what decision to make in a design, I always do the fun thing instead of the more balanced. And I always think the fun thing should be the most important. Game doesn't need to be perfectly balanced. It doesn't, you know, need to think of every edge or corner case. I know Doug and I kind of went back and forth on exploding dice at one point, and he was like, well, they should only explode once. And I was like, what if they just explode forever? And he's like, well, that's ridiculous. And I was like, yeah, but just think how fun that's going to be. So I always push for that in my design. Just do the fun thing.
And everybody always makes them explode infinitely anyway. So
yeah, it's just an easy forgotten rule.
Right. I guess about the design itself, I mean, playtesting is one of my big things, but that's, I guess, a little different. Probably what I said before, that ideally the rules should, like, get out of the way and let the game be the game.
Mm-hmm.
Games require rules without delving into, like, the pointless discussion of what is a game. But, you know, we accept certain rules when we play most games. And what can we do to make those rules as intuitive as possible, as easy to remember as possible, and, like John was saying, as fun as possible, so that we're not putting up barriers to things rather than, like, ways to access the fun and the excitement.
Now, on the, you know, the flip side of the coin, what is the most challenging or difficult thing when it comes to game design within your own spheres and processes?
For me, it's exactly the same as the most fun, the best thing, right? I tend to overdo and overprescribe and over, as I'm doing right now, just go over, right? And so getting out of my own way, or listening to John when he tells me to get out of my own way, or as happened with the magic system for Kids on Brooms, John and Spencer, who were both very right about that. So for that one, it was we wrote up the system, and I was advocating for it to be harder to use magic than it wound up being in the final rules. And that was a pretty lengthy discussion, not a heated one at all, but, like, very much like going back and forth about design philosophy and stuff. And I was definitely wrong.
I mean, and I don't even think it's a right or wrong. It's just right for the system. It, you know, in a different system, I think that would
work. Sure. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think for me, probably one of the hardest things is being done and thinking that something's good enough. Like, I have that problem that a lot of artists have where I see every flaw and everything that's ever been wrong with it, and, you know, compound that into the final vision. So Doug does a great job keeping me honest with that, and, you know, pushing me and letting me know that, you know, I need to let things go sometimes.
So now, just to, you know, just edge one more question in there.
You
mentioned Spencer. You know, I really like Icarus. It's one of my favorites.
Yes, one of the best.
Oh my God. It's so good.
Brilliant. Brilliant game. How was it working with Spencer on Brooms?
It was fantastic. The way that they handled everything, like, from the start, you know, they had a very, you know, detailed slideshow of their ideas, and, you know, everything was very professional and, you know, businesslike, and always open to discussion, and, you know, really just fit into our, you know, dynamic of how we design.
Yes, I think Spencer came in expecting this to be more towards that end of things than it wound up being. Less, you know, Kids on Bikes and Teens in Space is a lot of, like, two friends goofing around and creating something. And then that's what Kids on Brooms wound up being too, except there were three dudes. And when he pitched the idea to us, it was like this very, because he's West Coast, right? He's from LA. He's very much of the, like, all right, I'm going to do a high level pitch. And then he had, like, we found out recently, he even reached out to Heather about getting some sample art done so he could include that in the pitch. And we're like, dude, like, the thing you said on Twitter was enough. So he had been working on this idea independently. And when we decided we were going to be working on Kids on Brooms, a couple weeks later, after we, you know, started our brainstorming Google Doc, he said, hey, I just ran this really cool hack at a convention, and I thought it was really neat. I just John and Doug, I thought you guys would want to know about it. And so then we sent him a message and said, like, we do want to know about it, and we would love to work with you on it, which he interpreted as like, pitch it to me. And we meant as like, so let's
here's your chair, my friend. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just start.
Right. Let's hop on a Google Hangout and like BS around for a little while and figure it out. But it was awesome. Spencer is an unbelievably talented designer, mm-hmm. an unbelievably good storyteller. Just fantastic.
And just one of the best GMs around.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, yes.
That's awesome. And it was really cool when Kids on Brooms got announced and I saw Spencer's name was on there for the credits and I got excited. I smashed the pre-order button within seconds of even just seeing your three names on there. I really like Kids on Bikes. It's very innovative. It's that push forward that, you know, I think the industry has been needing for a very long time. So, you know, thank you both. And then of course to Spencer for creating these products and for, you know, doing such a good job on them.
Thank you.
Now, where amongst the social ether can we find the both of you?
I'm on Twitter. I don't tweet all that often, but I'm on there. I'm at Levzilla, which is a joke from one of my students.
And you can find me on Twitter at John Gilmore, JonGilmore.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for taking the time to, you know, jump on a call and talk about the products and yourselves. And I'm looking forward to everything you guys have coming down the pipeline.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, this has been a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
I'm going to hold you to that.
All right.
Done.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.